Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And this is The Food Fight, a frank discussion of food culture featuring Australia's top chefs, producers and experts.
We'll chat about real issues and go places others won't.
This podcast travels throughout the country and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and speak.
And we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging.
Here it is, another Stock Takes episode where me and Simon talk about Aria getting hammered by anti-vaxxers in the Instagram comments section. We talk about the opening of charcoal fish and the usual ramble about what we've seen on Instagram and a couple of hot tips to finish it off. Enjoy. Well, it's a beautiful day down here on the New South Wales south coast, Simon. And as we're still kind of separated from one another for the time being, we will
segregated,
be getting...
Segregated, you might say.
Segregated. Segregated by this fascist New South Wales government. Back to apartheid, really. We're here for another Stock Takes episode. Plenty going on in the world of food in Australia. Simon, I reckon we just launch straight into it. By now, if you haven't heard one of these, it's where Simon and I bring in some news, something that's going on in the food world. We talk a bit about what's going on Instagram as well, and we'll give you some tips at the end to round it out. It's a bit of a current affairs show, the only Australian current affairs food podcast out there. Brought to you by me and Simon. I don't know. I was going to try to say something witty, but it's basically me and Simon. You know us by now.
Brought to you by two white men. So there you go.
There you go. Just what the world needs.
Yeah.
Go for it, Simon. What's your first one?
The reason we're bringing this up is because Aria, a restaurant, recently posted about their reopening, and as almost a footnote in their comment, just said, obviously, along with predicted government guidelines, only those who are fully vaccinated will be able to dine with us. So this is a bit of an issue that's been coming up in hospitality world in the future, and everyone's a bit wondering what's going on. And the comment sections does not bode well for us. There's now currently 9,473 comments. The introduction of their new chef got 152. So you can see the difference here. Mainly made up from people not happy with that. And I think now a lot of hospitality people, a lot of supporters have jumped in to kind of bounce it up. But a lot of people calling it segregation, comparing it to horrific things like apartheid. There's probably someone calling someone a Nazi in the comments, because there always is. And it seems like, although I would maybe debate this, like it seems like not everyone is an anti-vaxxer. Some people claiming they are vaccinated just don't think there should be this mandate from the government. So it's pretty wild reading them. And I think it's got some people pretty worried. A little group chat started with some Wollongong Hospital people, which actually brought my attention to originally. And we sort of discussed it. And yeah, I think we're in a time where we've suffered a lot. And we are kind of the canaries down the mine of the first opening up. We've got another thing to worry about, and that might be abuse to our staff and to our businesses.
Mm. Okay, well, let's start from what the New South Wales policies are and just lay them out as the base for what we're going to talk about in regards to this. Mm-hmm. So tell us about what the policies are.
So, I mean, yet to be properly released, what kind of happens is that the government come out and say stuff in their press releases, and then a load of lawyers behind the scenes rush around to actually bring out the actual kind of legal side of it. And you see it with all the other lockdown mandates. It takes a couple of days for the actual public order to come out after it's been announced. So I don't think we've actually had confirmation, but or the legal side of it. I'm pretty sure they're working through that now. But when we do reopen, when we hit 80%.
No, 70%.
So sorry, it's 70% fully vaxxed.
The first Monday after 70% fully vaxxed is what information we have.
Which is looking around the middle of October, from the middle to the end of October. So everyone's kind of got a fairly rough working day. But from then until we're unsure, only people who can provide their vaccinated certificate, which is available on your New South Wales service or MyGov app, will be able to dine in restaurants or attend bars or I imagine other things like hairdressers, beauty salons.
I think gyms.
Gyms as well.
Yeah.
So quite a big step from the government.
Mm.
But it's for the safety of people. It's for the safety of the hospitality staff, and it's to stop new mutations from spreading around, which is what happens when the virus is left to run free in an unvaccinated population.
Yeah, and I guess the other probably important thing to note is that all staff will have to be vaccinated as well.
Well, unsure yet.
I think that's what I read.
It hasn't. There was an article in the news where that was again. It was uncertain. Like we're expecting that to be the case, but hasn't again really officially been announced. So as usual, we are sort of trading on rumors and hearsay all the time. Like I imagine it will be, but which has its own problems as well, because some places may be able to open back up, but might not be able to staff it. Like staffing for hospitality, as we've spoken about, is already hard. And it's becoming increasingly difficult for people to get the vaccine right now because of lack of supply and wait times and wait times between each vaccination as well. So unconfirmed that fact, but possibly expected.
Right. Now, let's talk a bit about the actual comments on the ARIA post itself and what we make of them and what sort of sorts of comments that we're looking at there. Essentially, it's a lot of mean-spirited comments talking about how they're going to lose all their entire business and like people are never going to eat there again. It essentially seems to me as if the announcement by ARIA was published on some pretty popular anti-vax forums and Facebook pages or Instagram pages or whatever, and it was kind of a call to arms, like release the hounds. One of Australia's big marquee restaurants is going to institute a policy of segregation, a discriminatory policy of segregation, so let's jump on them. And that seems to be what's happened. I mean, talk to me, Simon, about what do you think these sort of claims of, let's go a bit deeper into these sort of, when it comes to public safety and these claims of whether or not this is actually a discriminatory policy. Like, do you think that people are saying this is are some people saying this is a government policy that's discriminatory? And if you, as a business, are going to open your doors in line with this government policy, you are complicit in discrimination. I guess, the stupid thing is that that's not even it doesn't seem to be a nuance like that anyone even kind of touches on in these comment sections. It's all about how the restaurants the discriminator.
Mm.
But I mean, it seems very, very silly for me to not even be able to, you know, determine the difference between a restaurant opening with accordance with policy because they want to keep their business open,
yeah,
and a restaurant making these decisions for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpack with this, and this has basically taken up most of my brain space over the last couple of months. First of all, it's going to be a government mandate. So attacking the restaurant for following that is you're basically saying the restaurant should not follow that and cop a fine when we've been closed for months.
Mm.
So first of all, that's ridiculous that you're not, if you've got a problem with this, then you should be protesting the government, not business. Then the other people are basically claiming it's a sort of human rights violation when a private business is allowed to refuse service to anyone except for obviously people who have protected status and with the Human Rights Act. So obviously, you know, people with disabilities, with gender, with sexuality. Private business can just say we don't really want fully vaccinated people in. And if you don't want to hand over your medical information, that's also fine. But you can't come in. On face level, a business is allowed to do that. The slightly more complicated issue is whether a government can do it, but we'll maybe get to that shortly. People claiming it's segregation and it's against human rights and all these wild claims. People calling it apartheid, and you're like, this is not the fucking segregation of different races and human beings, like in society. This is going for dinner, or going to the pub. Like it's just for me. This is part of the social contract, is that you try and keep the health and well-being of your society around you, safe and healthy. So you get vaccinated and you follow the rules to help that.
I find one sort of just ironic and interesting thing as well, that like just the amount of, I don't know, there's a bit of a ignorance like when it comes to privilege as well, in a way. Like I think that it's, to use the word apartheid and to compare this to what that policy did in South Africa in terms of race relations is so,
it's disgusting.
I don't know, it's gross. It really is gross. Like to compare your inability to dine at one of the finest restaurants in the Southern Hemisphere, to compare that based on your choice to not get a vaccination that is available to you because of one reason or another, and to compare that to something like apartheid is as you said, Simon, pretty disgusting. And it's also just I don't know, it speaks to the caliber of the people making these comments on the Aria Instagram page.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of twofold people. There's the sort of anti-vax conspiracy people. As much as a lot of them will say I'm not anti-vax, if you are against this vaccination, which is has the same proofs and the same science and the same the same research behind it as other vaccines, you are anti-vaccine. Like there's no getting around it. You can't be like, I'm just anti this vaccine. It's like, this is, it's the same as the others. Then there's people who might be vaxxed and are more on the freedoms kind of side, and almost I've seen a lot of comments of people who don't like the fact that people are arguing over it and think we should all get along, and think that anyone who puts kind of puts pro-vaccine stuff out, or anti-vaxxer stuff out, is causing kind of animosity in the community and in our country. And I find that kind of thought process interesting, because they're on the side of vaccines, but they think that not getting vaccinated, which is potentially putting other people in danger and can potentially lead to other people dying, that is the same as calling out people. Like they're not polar opposites. It's not binary. Like they're quite different. One is calling out stupidity, and one is putting people in the risk of death. So like you can't really say that, you know, both sides need to stop arguing, just get on with it, because both sides are not even. They're not evenly weighted.
Mm. Yes. How do you what do you think of the sort of overall government no jab, no entry policy? Like, in, you know, I mean, personally, I'm in favor of no jab, no entry policies when it comes to these sorts of things, especially in the initial stages of opening up and stuff like that, where like this 70% threshold is, you know, very much the very lowest number that they can get to. And you know, we're still in a place where the overwhelming of, you know, medical services and things like that is a stark possibility in some areas and things like that. So all this stuff has to be done very carefully, especially in the initial stages. But where are you on that?
Well, I mean, they think that with COVID that we need a higher percentage of vaccinations compared to something like measles, where if you get to 85%, you basically stop all transmission. They think with COVID, you'd need to get higher, so into the 90s. So the fact that we're opening up at 70% basically relies on the majority, you know, if 70% vaccinated, but we can only have 90% of the people who are out and about to be fully vaccinated. So, I mean, it makes sense with the science. It's obviously not going to be forever when we get our vax rates up. But I mean, it definitely brings out a sort of visceral response from people, where it feels like it's taking away rights, even though, you know, there's no right to go to the pub. Because it's taken away sort of liberty. Again, this is sort of no liberty in going to private business. So I can see why people will get a bit angry about it. But then you think that, you know, healthcare workers have had to be vaccinated for a long time. To enter a lot of Asian African countries, there's a massive list of vaccinations you have to get. You know, school kids have to get vaccinated at certain ages. You know, and then if you go back in France, like, we carry driving licenses. Like, everyone has a driving license on them, like, that says they can drive a car. We all wear seatbelts because not just to save ourselves, but to save, you know, other people, like, you know, other passengers in your car. So there's already lots of things that happen that go, you know, that you're already being tracked on your iPhone and your laptop. So the thought that this is the straw, this is the controlling method from the government is a bit wild. And again, I think it's part of the social contract that we sign as a citizen of the society, that we need to look at, you know, keeping other people safe. And that's the main thing, is if you're not vaccinated, that means you can hold more of the virus. Viruses can mutate and it will move around the population and we'll never get rid of it. So it's and that's I mean, you can argue the science and the facts of that, but that is the science and that is the facts. Like, you can have your own opinion, but you can't have your own facts. It's the way we have to go. Like, I mean, I think, you know, with government policy has been pretty bad on the, and, you know, government advice and pretty bad, especially with AstraZeneca. And then obviously they completely fucked up the rollout. They fucked up actually getting the vaccines. It turns out, like, we could have got millions much earlier. So the government's done a terrible job at it, and that's only led to the fears and led to the worry about it. But what did we expect from this fucking awful government, really? So, you know, we shouldn't have expected much more. We've just got to carry load and pick up. I think the my worry now is that restaurants opening, we're now going to cop a lot of abuse, whether it's social media or reviews or whatever. So, or to the point where our staff can get abused, you know, our staff going to be at risk. And that's my big worry now. So I think that's something we need to think about. And definitely there was actually an article in Good Food yesterday with a couple of restaurants who have already come out and said that they will serve anyone. They don't care if they're vaccinated or non-vaccinated, which was a good little list of businesses I would probably not be frequenting.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, there's so much to get to. I guess a couple of things that I'll just note before we move on to those, you know, businesses saying that they'll serve anyone vaccinated or non-vaccinated is just to hit on that point one more time. That's like about the sort of the discrimination and the taking away of human rights and things like that. The simple way for me to think about it is your right is in your right to not get vaccinated. Everyone has the right to not get vaccinated. That's fine. If you choose not to, that's fine. But that just means that you have to, you know, participate in society in a way that people who choose not to get vaccinated are allowed to or are subject to making that human rights choice.
You're still going to be able to, you know, feed yourself, you know, work in some capacity, you know, have access to healthcare, which is an interesting one when you're actually putting a burden on the healthcare system. So, or no human rights being taken away, and just your ability to interact with society because you are a risk as an unvaccinated person, you know, a risk yourself and at risk to people who can't get vaccinated because of health issues, which is quite a large population. If you've got autoimmune disease, you might not be able to get the vaccine, or even if you have got the vaccine, you are still more susceptible to it. And we need to protect those people who are at higher risk. If they do contract COVID, they are higher risk of death and long-lasting illness. So, and I think like once you put it down to that is, and what once I mean, these people seem to not realize this fact because every other comment is, why are you worried about an unvaccinated person if you're vaccinated? And like, I've never in my life known a group of people who want to out themselves as stupid as much as anti-vaxxers. It's like normally people want to hide that. But like, that's just very easy knowledge to find out that like that's not the case. Like, so yeah, I mean, I just think if you're not vaccinated, fine, that's cool, but don't come to the pub because you know, we all want to be healthy.
And
leave the businesses and leave our staff alone.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we'll keep it going when we don't have to.
I also think that it's just like, I mean, where does just not being a dickhead come into all this and stuff as well? It's like, I've talked to a few people who own businesses and stuff, and they're like, fuck, we're worried about our staff. After all this, like, we've managed to keep our staff on. They've been doing their best for us through this whole lockdown. Hospitality was one of the hardest segments of the, of any industry hit by COVID. Like, and now you've got businesses trying to reopen and trying to do the right thing and all that sort of stuff. And people are worried about their staff getting yelled at by people. And people are worried about, you know, I don't know, threats and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, far out. Could you be more of a dickhead? Like, to treat other people who are just trying to, like, make a living and do business in this way? Like we just completely lost empathy that, like, in the middle of a lockdown, in the middle of a pandemic where people are struggling, like, your the most of your energy that you're going to put into anything is by going online and abusing people. Like, I don't know, I just think it's pretty gross. I think that like a couple of other things, notes just to touch on. One thing is that I think for businesses who have seen the ARIA thing and are getting worried about it, I think that there's a few things. One, this is definitely a case of like release the hounds, and they've got 9,000 comments on there from a community of people who have jumped on board this one particular post. I think that eventually, you know, businesses opening according to government mandate will be the law, and it'll be very common. Businesses will be opening only to vaccinated people. And I'm sorry, but there is not a proportion of anti-vax people that's going to put a dent into people's trade. I don't believe that that's the case.
Very small, loud.
It's people. So just remember, yes, it's a very, very small, very, very loud group of people. So don't let this deter you from operating, you know, your business to, number one, make you money, and number two, in the interest of public health. It's a very small, very loud group of people. So don't worry, once everyone's open, once the mandate is in place and all these businesses are open and starting to trade again, you know, this small portion of very loud people will be spread too thin to try to target all their energy at every single hospitality venue that's open. So, you know, you might have the odd dickhead come past and say something, but I don't think that the amplification of all this through one post on the ARIA website makes it sound like a lot worse than it is. When it comes to percentages, it's funny because a lot of people in this comment section on ARIA are saying, you're going to lose so much business, you're going to lose so much business. As I read this morning, the suburb of Blacktown in Sydney has recorded a 90% first dose vaccination rate. So that's 90% this is, and it's a single suburb and things like that, but I think that that's a very promising sign. 90% of people in you know, a populated suburb of Sydney have received their first dose of a vaccination. The rest of that population are either people who are choosing not to get the vaccine, but there's also in there are people who can't get the vaccine and people who haven't yet got the vaccine but are willing to as well. So that's just a good little indicator as to what it will be like. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of just have a, I don't know. I just, if I could look into the future, I think that once everything's open and we're all running and stuff again, people are going to be operating. The anti-vaxxers are going to be a lot less vocal online because life will be going back to normal. Yeah, I don't know. There just won't be as much hate in this what I believe to be a stupid debate.
For me, ARIA was probably the first post I saw about reopening as well. And they were pretty early on it because they're taking bookings. We don't even know when we're going to be fucking open yet. Like, we've got a rough idea. But so I think they were one of the first. They're a very high profile restaurant, and obviously there was a jump on aspect to it. So yeah, reading comment sections on anything to do with COVID right now is scary and worrying. But it's if you're an anti-vaxxer and you're real anti-vax, you are going to comment on every single thing you see. But someone who's pro-vaccine is not, you know, has better things to do. So it's just an disproportionate commenting system. But yeah, we'll see.
Yep. All right. Well, anything else you want to unpack on this one? Because we've only got a limited time and there's a few more things to get to.
Look, if you're pro for this or anti this, or if you're anti-vaxxer, please comment, because I would love an argument.
Oh, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Comment on this Instagram post on this podcast. Question. What do you make of venues that have already that are publicly posting? Like, I noticed a cafe that I follow on Instagram do a post that says that they will not discriminate against people. And I just think that the use of the word discriminate is just, I don't know.
Yeah. When they're already actually segregating sexes in schools in Afghanistan and all these things actual segregation happen around the world, to talk about some people being able to go for dinner for a couple of months while other people can't, as segregation is just, again, it's gross. I think these businesses are just asking to be fined for it. Like, I'm not sure what the police presence and what the sort of crackdown is going to be, but these businesses, it's like, if I was the coppers, I'd just be listing them off the article and be like, well, I'm going to go see them on day one.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems crazy. I mean, the thing is, the annoyance is we are going to have to check this. And that's just another thing we have to do in hospitality, try and keep people happy. It's already hard enough to keep customers happy sometimes. So having to check these things, we're probably going to get someone who hasn't got the certificate or hasn't quite got their second jab, but they're there with family. And it's going to cause some arguments along the way. And no one's looking forward to that. Like, I mean, this is the thing, is that the people who are blaming the restaurant, if we didn't have to do this, we wouldn't do it. Like, maybe some businesses would, but we, like, as much as we'd rather have vaccinated people, we would not go into trouble because we really don't want to have to fucking deal with this right now.
Exactly. Just kind of want to get open. I think that, I don't know. It seems like it might be I don't know. I guess some people don't think about this debate and are influenced by their own, you know, social media algorithms and things like that. But like, if you're a hospitality owner out there, and you're sort of, you know, you're thinking, oh, look, it might be a good look for me to say we're not going to discriminate against unvaccinated people and stuff like that. Just like, well, my recommendation is don't post at all.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of wait until the mandate comes out and when everyone starts to reopen with according to government guidelines. Like, I think that if you jump into the debate or jump into the conversation on Instagram, like if you say, hey, we're going to serve unvaccinated people, then I mean, I'm not going to go to your shop.
Yeah.
If you say that, I'm not. I know a lot of people who won't. I'm not going to support a business who panders to the anti-vax community. Mm. And also, you know, if you can have a real thick skin and big spine and get out there and say, fuck all you anti-vaxxers, we're opening up because this government, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, then you're just sort of putting yourself in the firing line as well. So like, I don't know. I don't think it's worth it for most businesses to really jump in on social media and have a crack with it.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see now that no one is, people will announce their opening, but no one's going to mention the vaccinated thing.
Just yes, exactly.
Not deal with it. It's kind of like this whole time we've always been reassuring our customers that we're doing the right thing. So I think it's time for them just to assume that we are and can go with it. So we haven't got to fucking mention it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
Mm.
Yeah, plenty there to unpack, and we'll post about it. Like, we'll try to post this video on Instagram, and hopefully, a lot of people can come and try to argue with us, which is hilarious.
Let's go. I've got time.
Charcoal Fish is opening on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday the 15th. I mean, this is like a really, really anticipated opening. Super interesting looking business. A takeaway business from St. Peter / Fish Butchery / Josh and Julie Nyland. Basically serving a shitload of Murray cod done in different ways, like a charcoal chicken shop where you can just go and pick up a... you know, chicken and chips. Chicken this time you'll be pack. Picking up your. This time you're picking up your Murray cod pack. All sorts of different ways. Like, I mean, to break it down a little bit, what this menu is looking like. A barbecue Murray cod fillet. You can do family packs that have like that feed six people with Murray cod fillet and pickles and chips and rolls and things like that. They'll have. Rotisserie Murray cod and gravy rolls with skin and stuffing, Murray cod salad. There's the yellowfin tuna cheeseburger on the menu too. Barbecued Murray cod wings, fish and chips. Like quite a simple menu. A few sides like chips and salads and a few different veggies and salad options and things like that as well. Very much just looking like your local charcoal chicken, but basically with
fish
with Murray cod instead of charcoal chicken. What are your initial impressions, Simon?
I think it's interesting because this seems to be a business that has come out of lockdowns, where they, like the Fish Butchery, made a bloody killing during lockdowns with selling all their little bits, their little, like, you know, whether it was a burger or a tuna, like tuna burger or a lasagna or whatever it was. So they did pretty well. So I think this business has come out of that, of you know, how do we latch on to this customer base that we can, you know, get you know, once a week, every, you know, couple of times a week to come down. So that's interesting that you're seeing some fruition of lockdown ideas. It seems very much in line with what he wants to do, and that's kind of bring fish to the living rooms of the people. And Murray cod is an awesome bloody fish, and it is very much it's a bit of a chicken fish. Like, you can do anything with it.
Sustainable. It's sustainably farmed.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons also that they note is that they basically reckon that they can make use of 90% 95% of the weight of each of these Murray cods, which is massive considering the traditional sort of usage of a fish is around the 50% or less mark. So yeah, making use of 95% of it, that's another sort of step forward. Do you, like, I mean, if you lived around Rose Bay, I mean, I suppose it's pretty hard for us to comment on it because we haven't eaten any of the food yet. But this is the type of venue that you'd assume wants to have a lot of regulars. And it's sort of one of those things where you know, for example, I've got Puppy Dulce in Wollongong, a burger shop dive bar just around the corner from me. And it's like when you can't be bothered doing anything and you're like, oh, what are we going to have for dinner tonight? You go just, oh, let's just grab a burger from Puppies because we know it's good. And it's an easy choice. Like, do you see, if you lived around Rose Bay, do you see, like, yourself on a Thursday night going, like, I don't know what I want to do for dinner. Like, let's just grab a Murray cod pack with some salad and rolls and things like that, and that can be dinner. Like, do you see yourself doing that on a frequent basis? Like, and it's very, very hard to comment because we haven't tasted it yet.
Yeah.
And the other question that's a part of that is, do you see yourself doing that? Like, do you see yourself taking the Murray cod option and not the charcoal chicken option that's around the corner for a cheaper price?
It's I bloody love me some good fish and chips. So if I had a place doing banging fish and chips and Murray cod, I would, maybe not quite once a week, but when I had that inkling for fish and chips, I'd hit that.
Yeah.
I think that it's Rose Bay, so you've got the clientele, and you've got the affluence to be able to afford it. So I don't think the price is.
Well, here's the question for you though. Like, if you're the punter, mate, like, are you paying $28 for your fish and chips, which is how much it costs every time you want your fish and chips?
Oh yeah, I totally would. Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. I would spend more on fish and chips if it was banging.
Yeah,
like, okay. Obviously the quality's got to match the price. So yeah, I'd have no problem with that. Whether I would grab like a Murray cod roll and gravy often. I think the worry would be is how long term is this? I think like everyone's going to go once.
That's exactly right.
And you're going to make a kill in there. After that, how many people go back? It's very popular. He's got sort of, you know, international acclaim now. So when tourists are back in, I imagine it's going to be a bit of a foodie tourist spot. So there's that. Are people going to consistently, you know, grab a cod and gravy roll or the packs?
I think it's very hard for us to have a guess at this without tasting the food. Because the interesting thing is, like, if you're going to pay $22 for a cod and gravy roll on a regular basis, that's automatically you got to know that cod and gravy roll is way better than a, you know, roast pork roll from the charcoal chicken shop around the corner.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be better.
Yeah.
You know, like it has to be a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, to get it regularly, right?
One of the interesting parts, which I like, is when, you know, good chefs take on those sort of every street corner concepts, like whether it's a chicken shop or whether it's a burger shop or whatever it is, and sort of add that extra bit of noose to it. And obviously you pay for it. But so I always like that. So is the standard of the Murray cod going to be so high and it all well, so well done that it's better than the sort of the you know, perfectly average chicken shop down the road? I imagine that they don't know really what's going to happen. I think they think there's a customer base that they've shown during lockdowns, and they're giving it a go and they're hopeful. But I doubt they know. You know, no one knows 100% whether your business idea is going to take off, and especially it's when it's something that hasn't really been done before.
How many? There's a lot of people out there who prefer to eat pescatarian where they can, and one of the cool things about charcoal fish seems to be, to me, is just providing that pescatarian alternative for people looking for a quick lunch that's not just fish and chips.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like there's a few, you know, like, and one of the things that I look for, especially like eating through the week, like say, for example, I was, you know, if I lived around the area and was working from home, it's sometimes tough to find quite a healthy takeaway lunch.
Yeah.
It can be tough. Like,
not
you know,
a sandwich.
Not a sandwich, yeah. Not a wrap, not a, like, you know, like maybe if you've got a poke bowl place yeah, nearby, so that's
hot,
good. But
hot and filling.
Yeah, like I struggle because, yeah, like if you want to get a takeaway lunch, a lot of the time you can either, yeah, there's the healthy options aren't that good. So something that definitely appeals to me is like these rosemary cod salads and things like that, where you just get a nice piece of fish and some nice salad and things like that. And that's just like a nice hot, light lunch, you know, that tastes awesome. So those sorts of things I find appealing as well. So I think the health aspect is probably a big clientele as well.
Yeah. I mean, everything that Josh and I have done so far has been a massive success. So, probably best not to doubt him. Definitely looking forward to when we can get back to Sydney, possibly when we're doing a podcast with someone to pop
maybe in. We do a review and put it on our Instagram.
Yeah, somewhere. We'll do a review of Murray Cod and gravy rolls.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting one. Looking forward to it opening. I think that, like, again, like any little trickle of information about sustainable seafoods, another good one that helps educate people. Making use of Murray Cod, there's just something so iconically Australian about the Murray Cod and specifically Southern Australia. Like there's some iconic Australian fish out there. I think barramundi's probably top of the tree, but I think Murray Cod's right there. And in terms of like a place, in terms of New South Wales, they're sourcing it from Griffith. I've visited Murray Cod farms before. There's some fantastic Murray Cod farms in New South Wales, and you know, we need to be using more of it. It's such a great native fish that ticks a lot of boxes in you know, in terms of the variety of things that you can do with it and stuff as well. So,
yeah,
should be interesting. We'll see how we go. All right. Let's move on to internet-y, Instagram-y stuff.
We'll stay on the topic of rich people in Rose Bay and what they eat.
And seafood.
I found a Daily Mail article. I shouldn't be particularly
quality
surprised.
Publication.
Yeah. Always down the line. So the headline is from $555 lobster boxes to $150 packs of roast chicken. How the wealthiest families in lockdown are dining like royalty under stay-at-home orders.
Mm.
Inflections were mine, but that's how I feel that people are reading it. Mainly I'm just sick of articles focusing on price of food. They'll be the same people who report on, you know, underpayment of staff, and, you know, hospitality businesses struggling, and, you know, mom and dad businesses, little restaurant in the corner can't pay the bills, and then they'll make a fuss about things costing too much. Like you can't have it both ways. On the face of that, $555 seafood box is pretty spenno.
Yeah, I mean, look, it is, and this is the Catalina restaurant in Rose Bay. It doesn't say, like, I mean, I don't know. I was looking at what looks like it's in that box, and I guess, but it looks like it's kind of not that great of value.
Yeah,
like there's a lobster in there, and there's a mud crab in there, and there's a sorry, I'm just pulling up the
there's one rock lobster, there's a mud crab, there's 8 prawns, there's 12 oysters, some salad, some bread, obviously some dressings, and there's also some smoked salmon, which is maybe 150 grams from eyeballing it.
Yeah.
So imagine some amazingly beautiful ingredients, and, you know, lobsters coming in at, you know, anywhere $60 to $80 a kilo or more. So by the time you put your markup on, you know, oysters are easily $5 in a restaurant now. a mud crab. So I sort of added it up yesterday and was like, it's up there in price, but it's seafood is expensive, and that's kind of the way it is.
I think one of the things to remember is that, like, if you've been for a walk around Rose Bay and had a look at some of the houses in the area, like, and in all those sorts of areas and the different places that they're delivering to, like Point Piper and all these other beautiful spots around Sydney, like, we're talking real estate in the $10 million, you know, in the $10 million realm. And, I mean, to a lot of these people, I don't even know if their eyes and brain register $555 as a cost. Because, like, it's almost like it's, like, not worth your time. If it doesn't have four figures or more, you don't necessarily need to register the, like, what that number actually says and means. You just sort of look at the photo and there's lobsters and oysters and mud crab and stuff, and you go, I'll buy it, and then you get it.
I think if
that's your market, and obviously they've been very busy, very, very busy selling these, then fucking good on you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what it comes down to is not every restaurant has to serve every person. A restaurant isn't obliged to have anything for a price that a certain person can afford. Like, that's, I mean, you know, this is a capitalist society as much as anti-capitalist, but that's the way it bloody works. Like, and if they can put it on for that price and they're selling it, then that is what it's worth, because that is how you determine worth.
Exactly.
And value. Yep. It's what someone will pay. I can see why people are a bit shocked, but
I don't even know if anyone's shocked. It's just the Daily Mail.
But if you read the comments and people,
those comments and stuff.
Yeah, like if you go on the Facebook,
I suppose everyone always complains about. There's always someone out there to complain about the price.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember, Simon, to take you back to my first job in hospitality, working at Rolls Choice in Canberra, my mum's sandwich shop.
The legendary.
We were the first people in Canberra to, I don't know, maybe the first people in general to sell a sandwich for more than $10.
I remember this because I was in the UK at the time, but it made
news.
News, yeah.
But yeah, like when we first hit the $10 mark for sandwiches, we got a lot of fucking complaints. A lot of people, like, people would walk up to, like, they'd kind of look at the menu and then they'd be like, oh, that's $10.90. Like, no. Yeah. And then they'd be, hold on, that's $10.90. And they'd walk up to the counter to tell you that the food's too expensive. You're like, that's the price. Yeah. And I hope you enjoy wherever else you go for lunch.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to say here. So, I don't know. Making comments on Instagram posts and news articles that food's too expensive is like, oh, my God. You'd think people have better things to do with their time.
But I think the main thing is that And to be honest, like, even like good food are just as bad for it. And food publications, they're like, I remember it was like Chiswick's $75 cauliflower a while ago. It's lazy journalism. It's easy clickbait.
It's easy clickbait.
Yeah. But it, like, you can't have that one article and then complain about an underpayment of staff in the next article. It doesn't work like that. Yeah, so they really need to get rid of that. And I think, hospitality venues need to start, you know, pushing back on it a little bit and saying that, like, look, this is, if you want to support us by not publishing these bullshit articles.
Yep. And I tell you what, if someone put that fucking seafood box in front of me, I'd be a very, very happy man.
Oh, yeah. Loving it.
It looks delicious.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Eat it or don't. Got the money or not. Whatever. Up to you.
Yeah.
All right, quickly move on to my last little thing and then we'll finish up. But I just wanted to shout out, like, scrolling through Instagram, some of the cool things that you see, like, and if people haven't seen this yet, but there's a business called Chez Dominique down here on the South Coast, exactly where I am. They're based out of Maria here, which is about half an hour south of Batemans Bay. And I've been in touch with them. I'm trying to get them on the podcast, Julian and Elsa. They ran a bistro over in France I can't remember their name. I had to close all my windows before. I can't remember the name of the bistro that they had, but they had a bistro in France that looked amazing. And then they found their way over here to live on the south coast of New South Wales. And for a long time, they were doing private dinners and like catering and pop-ups and things. You can follow them at Chez Dominique on Instagram. And then when Merivale bought some properties down in Narooma, they enlisted these guys to set up a bistro at the Whale Inn, which is one of the properties in Maruya that they bought. And the food just looks fantastic. I'm just really into classic European sort of provincial food. And some of their menus at the Whale looked absolutely beautiful, just really, really simple, you know, just fish and escabeche and some terrines and things like that. Simple European food. And it looks great. And I guess one of the things that I'm excited about and the reason that I bring it up is that since regional lockdown, they haven't been able to trade at the Whale. So these guys are doing these Apero packs. And that's just kind of, I don't know, I just feel like it's just kind of one of the cool things about the way that businesses are adapting during this lockdown. So this Apero pack, which I put my order in for, I'm picking it up from the car park in Maruya on Friday Arvo, is a rosemary and caper focaccia, caraway sourdough crackers, pork and pistachio terrine, beetroot mutabal dip, a whole wheel of Tilba Brie cheese, and rhubarb and almond financier, which is a nice little picnic pack. $60, feed great. A couple of people, and you know, I mean, these guys are just going to cook it and make some terrines and whatever. And the beauty of it is, they basically did a shout out on their Instagram. They're like, all right, well, if we do this, it's going to be about $60 a pack. Like, just leave us a comment or write us a DM if you're interested, and we'll see if we get enough interest to do it. And then they got enough interest to do it. So they're like, all right, well, here's the menu and this is the logistics of it. Just DM us on Instagram to reserve yours, which I did. And literally fucking a couple of hours later, sold out.
Yeah.
Wow. So, like, you know, and this is just the tiniest little thing on the South Coast, but I think it's just a great little thing about what hospitality businesses can do and can adapt. And, you know, they can make a bit of money and they can put these packs together through the week and they can sit in a car park in Maruya next to the river on Friday Arvo distributing these, you know, beautiful terrines and things like that for people to enjoy on a Friday night. Love it.
Just another great thing on the South Coast and Narooma in particular.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to get these guys on the podcast this way. I think Julian worked at Septeam for a while as well. Which is world's best 50, you know, Parisian bistro that I was lucky enough to dine at once as well. So, like seriously good chefs and very, very much making the most of fantastic local South Coast produce found around the Sage Farmers Markets and elsewhere here on the South Coast. Cool things happening in the regions, Simon. In small little places like this, you get, you know, Septeam caliber chefs putting together Apero packs, picking it up out of the boot of a car on a Friday Arvo. Love it.
There's another reason to head down the coast from Sydney when we are allowed to do such things.
That's it. Okay, finally, quickly, tips. Simon, your tip?
Get a diamond steel and learn how to use it. Everyone has, like, or not everyone, but most people have just blunt as fuck knives in their house. And you don't have to sharpen it. You don't need those sharpening tools because they, over time, will fuck your knife. There's all, like, things you see on, like, infomercials. They actually take a layer off your knife. So if you once in a while, yes, to kind of recalibrate it, but all the time and you fuck your knife. So get a steel, get a diamond steel. Ceramic is also pretty good. Learn how to use it. There'll be a YouTube video. And just give it a lick before you do something with your knife and your cooking game will go up 17%.
Yeah, totally agreed. I absolutely hate, like, you know, if you go to like an Airbnb or something like that away for the weekend and you try to do some cooking and they've got dull knives, like, it's so annoying.
And it would just, and all you have to do is give that a lick before. And even if you've got like an average knife or not a good knife, this will just keep, like, it just straightens up. It just straightens the blade and you'll feel a difference. And it's basically, that's all I really do to my knives, except for the occasional professional sharpen. It's just like, I mean, between almost every job and probably if I'm using it a lot, every 10 minutes, it'll be going through the steel.
Yep. Cool. Well, my tip is about buying toasters. So for some reason, people who make toasters generally believe that all bread is sliced like bread from a supermarket, it seems. Yeah. And toasters are built for this particular type of bread. They've got like short square slots that are quite deep to accommodate this like large sort of square flat piece of toast from a loaf. And that is probably the majority of the toast that people eat. But don't worry about these silly ones. You've got to get a toaster with the long slots. You've got to get a toaster with the long slots. I don't understand people getting a four-slice toaster that has four individual slots. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You got to get a four-slice toaster that has two long slots because you get the best of all your worlds. You get a you can put four slices of normal toast in it if you want.
You can do half a baguette.
You can do fucking half a baguette. You can do if you get a panna di casa, like some big crusty Italian loaf, and take a cut right out of the center of that thing, you'll be able to fit it in and toast the whole bloody lot. Yeah. It makes no sense to me that your normal toaster can only accommodate a piece of Helga's or Tip Top or something like that, and that your sourdough is left hanging out of your toast slot and not evenly toasted the whole way through. It's a crime, and people need, industrial designers out there need to pay more attention to the to their toasters.
So you're not a fan of the grill for toast?
I mean, you can put your toast under the grill if you want, but like it's much easier in a toaster if you've got a long slot toaster.
You get different toast if you put it under a grill.
You prefer grill toast?
No, I think I'd use it for different things. Like if I just want a piece of toast with butter on, you can't get the same effect you do in a toaster in a grill.
I agree, because you're kind of cooking the bread through in a grill.
Yeah,
And in the toaster, you're kind of just cooking the outsides.
Yeah, because you want that middle. Because if you just toast a piece of bread and it's just all crispy, that's not nice. You want that soft, sticky middle.
It's like making croutons, sort of, in the oven.
Yeah. It's like a big crouton. So I find the grill does that. Or if you try and go too high on it, especially like commercial grills, you end up with a bit of char. I don't always want that char. I want that Maillard effect on my bread. Yeah.
And I guess the other, I mentioned this in a previous tip, but I don't know. Another one just to add on to this while we're talking about toast is buy good sourdough. Actually, buy good sourdough and don't worry about eating it that day because you can always fucking slice it up and put it in the freezer and you can use it and it's great.
Last minute toast.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Did you notice, maybe you can just answer this question really quickly, Stefan.
Sure.
I always found that the sourdough in Australia not to be that sour.
Depends on where you get it, I reckon.
Compared to Europe's.
Yeah, okay, right. I probably haven't paid enough attention to sourdough consumption in Europe.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a spectrum of sourness when it comes to different sourdough bakeries here in Australia. And I do think that, like, probably the majority, when it comes to that bell curve, the majority sit on the lighter sourness side than the sourness side.
Most of them to just not be sour. And then the sourdough we used to make back in Wales was so sour.
Mm.
So please, if anyone could answer me that question, that'd be excellent.
Leave in the comments where the sourest sourdough is.
Yeah, the sourest of the sourdoughs.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, there it is for another episode. I hope everyone has a good week, mate. Another great chat. And we'll be back with some more of these stock takes coming soon. I mean, we're still separated from one another and unable to do in-person podcasts. But I like these. I think that this is a good format. And, releasing them on a weekly basis means that everything's fresh. Yeah. I mean, we're recording this on a Monday and we're going to release it this afternoon. Charcoal Fish is opening on Wednesday. Keeping it current. This is your only current affairs food podcast in Australia. Hope you're enjoying it.
As sour as it should be.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks,
Better,
everyone.
Mate. See ya.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's simon_evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.